It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation, and happy Tuesday to all of you. I am Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show, and we have conversations about important issues so that you can get your brains around these issues and converse with your friends, family, colleagues, and neighbors about the big ideas that the battle of ideas that is raging in America today. We've got a great show planned for you today. In studio with me is Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Great to have you here.
Yep, great to be here as always, Kim. Thank you.
We're going to have a great conversation about a variety of things. So it's
mishmash.
Always great to have you here. And thank you to the team. Thank you to Steve, Patty, Keith, Zach, and Charlie for keeping this train on the track. And thank you to each of you listeners out there as well. You are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence today and take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. And Jason, as you know, as we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And ultimately, Americans like freedom. And socialism, there's been this kind of this romance of this whole narrative of socialism in our country today. And socialism ultimately comes down to force, and it is never compassionate to take other people's stuff via force. And that could be their rights, their property, or their freedom. And the force can be either by a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. And as Steve found this meme, it says you can vote your way into socialism, but you have to shoot your way back out of it. So be sure and check out my website. It's Kim Munson. That's spelled MUNSON.com. And podcasts and recaps of the show are available there. And want to thank Zach for the good work that he does there. Our quote today for inspiration and wisdom is from Victor Davis Hanson. Victor Davis Hanson, we've had him on the show several times. And you know, he is a professor out at the Hoover Institute at Stanford. He's actually also a farmer in the Central Valley in California. And he has written some very important pieces about what's happening to California. So I thought, he would be the perfect guy to quote today. And he says, multiculturalism is a good reminder that when standards are relative, there are no standards at all. And on that note then, Steve, are you ready for the funnies? Okay. You know you are in California when you have a very strong opinion about where your coffee beans are grown and can taste the difference between Sumatra and Ethiopian coffee. Number two. You know you're in California when your child's third grade teacher has two pierced ears, a nose ring, and his name Breeze. And after telling that to a friend, they still needed to ask you if the teacher is male or female.
I'd still need to ask that no matter what state I was in, Kim.
That's true. But we're talking about California today, so I thought I would take some journalistic latitude on this whole thing.
License.
Okay, and the last thing is, as you know, you are in California if you keep a list of companies to boycott.
You know, you mentioned the coffee beans, Kim, and I don't know if you've heard of this, but like one of the new crazes with coffee that's supposed to be good are coffee beans that a cat has eaten, pooped out, and they've taken the beans out of the cat poop.
You know, I actually have heard that.
I have not drank any of that coffee, nor would I admit to it if I had.
I'm not interested in drinking
it. But I'm not sure exactly who thought it up.
That is one of those, who would have thought that up? Yeah.
Kind of like the first person that saw lobster come crawling out of the sea and said, that looks good to eat.
Jason McBride, sometimes I wonder where you come up with this stuff. So, hey, today is, I got a lot of stuff going on. Tonight from 5:30 to 7:30, I will be emceeing, Wine and Wine Down. It is an event by the Colorado Women's Alliance. It'll be down at Montford headquarters. I think there's still a few tickets available. You can go to Colorado Women's Alliance and sign up there. But it's going to be Women of the Airways. I will be emceeing, and Krista Kafer and Mandy Connell, who are on a couple of the other stations, will be there as well. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So come on, join us. It'll be great. So again, go to the Colorado Women's Alliance website, and you can sign up there. And then when I came in this morning, there was this note from Darby. And she said, the KLZ Facebook page asks for comments to be read on air on yesterday, which was Veterans Day, November 11th. And she said, this is one that came in. And so I wanted to read it. This is from Lois Voga. She said, I want to thank my mother, Marie West, who served in World War II. She's 96 and 7 months and still going strong. I would also like to say thank you to my husband, Roger Voga, who was in the Navy and served on an aircraft carrier from 1957 to 1961. My mother was also in the Navy as a blimp mechanic. And so, Lois Voga, thank you so much for sending that over. And thank you to your mother and your husband and also the families for all those who have served. And it was a very special day, Veterans Day. And I know that we mentioned it, Jason McBride, but your father-in-law served in Vietnam, and you just have great regard for him.
I certainly do. Mike Moon, my father-in-law, lives in Little Kearney, Missouri, and he certainly has been a great inspiration to me and a source of strength, even though I met him later in my life.
And thank you to him for his service.
Absolutely.
So let's jump in here, Jason, with some of these headlines that we have. And the first one I want to go to is the one that a Democrat Socialist of America candidate is poised to take office in Aurora. It appears, and they're having a heck of a time over there in Arapahoe County and Aurora regarding the ballots. Mike Kaufman had, at the end of Election Day, had a very sizable lead as mayor, and that continues to dissipate. It's so interesting how that happens, how these ballots start to turn up. So anyway, they're checking that out, but it does look like that here in Aurora, they have elected a candidate endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America to city council. Juan Marcano is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, according to the group's endorsement, currently leads incumbent Charles Richardson by 230 votes. Although the Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder's Office has been in the midst of a controversy over replacement ballots going out late and a mayoral race that is still in the curing process, it doesn't appear that there is any path that would see a change in the results for the Ward 4 race. According to its website, a Democratic Socialist of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States with 55,000 members and 250 local groups. Its mission is to build progressive movements for social change. At the root of our socialism is a profound commitment to democracy as means and end. This website reads, as we are likely to see an immediate end to capitalism tomorrow, Democratic Socialists of America fights for reforms today that will weaken the power of corporations and increase the power of working people. We are excited to expand our electoral work into Aurora with the Democratic Socialists, says the endorsement from the Denver chapter of the DSA.
Hmm.
Now, this is really interesting. Marcano's endorsements didn't end with the DSA, however. Many elected Democrats came out in favor of the candidate who ran on his immigrant roots, including Attorney General Phil Weiser, 6th Congressional District Representative Jason Crow, Arapahoe County Commissioners Nancy Jackson and Bill Holen, and State Representative Mike Weissman. He also received the endorsements of organizations such as Working Families Party, Run for Something, and Colorado People's Action, all of which recruit and support young progressives to help build their political careers and advance the socialist movement. According to Marcano's Facebook page and website, he ran on increased public transit access, creating a city-owned bank, expanding affordable housing options with community land trusts, city-owned broadband service, and increase multimodal transit options. So, Jason, let's unpack that just a little bit, okay?
Boy, there's a lot to unpack there.
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to jump in?
Well, a couple of thoughts. You know, this the old saying about socialism is, if it's so good, why does it have to be forced on people? You got to give them some credit. They've created this democratic socialism now, which basically says, vote us in and we'll give you socialism. But I always wonder, socialism, there seem to be those that expect to receive something and the group that they expect to take it away from. And I just keep wondering, if you vote for a socialist and get them in, do you think they're keeping track of who voted and you'll be exempt from being one of the ones it's taken away from?
I actually think so. I think people actually think that they will be the ones that will be the receiver and they will be taking from other people. But let's look at that very last thing that he ran on. It says he ran, first of all, on increased public transit access. Well, actually, I think there's plenty of transit access out there. The problem is people actually really like their own personal vehicles because they are able to go where they want to, when they want to. My friend Helen Raleigh, who immigrated from China, and China, you know, has been a bicycle and a walking economy for everyday people. Mm-hmm. Of course, the elites get to drive around in cars, but everyday working people have to be on buses and bicycles. And that's not a free economy because then you have to go, you go where they want you to on their schedule instead of your schedule. And so that's number one. If it was such a great deal, people would be riding these buses and trains right now, but they actually are voting with their cars, Jason.
So it's not a lack of access. It's a lack of utilization. Is that what you're saying, Kim?
That's exactly right, because in an upwardly mobile economic mobility society, people want to be able to go where they want to, when they want to. Pushing people onto trains and cars and buses takes away their freedom of mobility, their freedom to be able to move around.
You know, it's funny you brought that up. I was thinking the other day that Steve had talked about, you know, that every ticket on the train or public transportation here, 80% of it is subsidized mm-hmm. by taxpayers. I have a better idea. Why not subsidize Uber and Lyft with that money instead of having polluting, ugly trains? That would also help put a lot of people to work and would strengthen the economy, and you could get the exact same thing, except people could get all the way from point A to point B in an Uber or a Lyft.
Well, and I like most of what you're saying. However, I think let's just get the government money out of that. Let's lower taxes. Let's lower regulations. And speaking of Uber and Lyft, I can't remember what the bill number was down here, and I think it passed. I'm going to have to check this. But they were actually putting through legislation right here in Colorado that says that if you use your personal vehicle for commercial purposes, mm-hmm. so that's going to be Uber or Lyft, that you will have to pay an extra penalty if it is not an electric vehicle or an extra fee. And so instead of doing that kind of stuff, let's keep everything a little freer. But let's go to break. Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management is in studio with me. And we may spend the whole next segment just going through Marcano's Facebook page and his website on what he ran on out there in Aurora. We've talked about increased public transit access. Let's go through the other ones as well. So this is Kim Munson. I'm having a conversation with Jason McBride. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson, and we are having a great conversation with a very valued partner, Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. It's great having you here today.
Well, thank you.
And want to continue on. We are talking about this Democrat Socialist of America candidate who looks like he's going to get onto Aurora City Council. They're still kind of, I think, finishing up the votes on that. But on his Facebook page and website, he ran on increased public transit access, creating a city-owned bank, expanding affordable housing options with community land trust, city-owned broadband service, and increased multimodal transit options. Now, Jason, you just mentioned something that we have talked about on the show, and that is if something is such a good idea, you should not have to force it.
Right.
And socialism ultimately comes down to force. And what is amazing to me about socialists is they think that government is the answer. This Juan Marcano looks at this and says, ah, corporations, that they're the problem. But actually, no corporation can actually come to you and forcibly take your stuff from you. Corporations have to be able to compete, and you can say yes or no on whether or not you're going to buy their product or their service. But government can actually come in, and they can force you to do things. And so when you have government as the answer, then you're going to have big problems. Steve, you look like you want to say something.
I'd like to know what that look is. Right there, I mean, you read it earlier, hit the quote from him, as we are unlikely to see an immediate end to capitalism tomorrow, DSA fights for reforms today that will weaken the power of corporations and increase the power of working people. I mean, talk about a challenge.
Well, and you need to take out the words increase the power of working people and insert the words the power of government.
Yes.
Because that's what it really is. But they use these words to make people think that they really care about everyday people. But we've seen time after time after time, everyday people do not thrive and prosper under socialism.
Well, they don't. And Kim, not that corporations are perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but if you weaken corporations, they're going to have to lay people off. And how does that help to empower the working person when they no longer have a job?
Very, very good point. And we're actually seeing that happen in Colorado. We see that happen with the oil and gas industry,
Government
has come in and they are trying to weaken corporations. And also in the oil and gas industry, oil and gas has been one of the fossil fuels has enabled everyday people. It's freed them up to be able to go out and do other things instead of having to try to, heat their water, heat their homes, go out and find fuel. Instead, they can take their time and they can do other things. Now, I would submit to you that it's because of this great prosperity that we're having a breakdown in some of our society as well, because people have too much idle time on their hands.
Boy, I wish I could fund some of that, but maybe there are folks that do. That's an interesting concept, Kim. You know that what's the saying? Idle hands are the devil's hands. That's not exactly correct, but you know it better than me.
Yep. So let's continue on here. Mm-hmm. The next thing he says, creating a city-owned bank. Really, Aurora should get into the banking business? Government should be limited. And so a city-owned bank, what would that mean exactly? That they would make loans that maybe people wouldn't be able to pay back, and then the taxpayers of Aurora would back that up? I mean, that really doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, we already tried that when the government made all of the large banks across the country give loans to people that couldn't pay them back. And ultimately, we had the meltdown of 2008 as a result that we still haven't fully recovered from. So there's an experiment that has failed on a grand scale, and now the city of Aurora wants to try it on a smaller scale because they'll be able to do it better.
Okay, next thing, expanding affordable housing options. We've had Randall O'Toole with the Cato Institute, and he's also with the Independence Institute on a number of times. And he has said that Boulder is one of the most expensive places to live in the United States, but the metro area, because of our urban core land barriers, the boundaries, the urban boundaries, that we are constricting the supply. And then we are using economic development dollars, government dollars, to bring corporations in that the government officials want to have come in, the PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties. And then we're also increasing rules and regulations on building housing, and that is why housing is not affordable. But so they create the problem, Jason. And then he wants to come in with another government option. It's going to be government-owned housing. We saw what that looked like in the projects in Chicago.
Well, we've seen what that looks like pretty much everywhere, and it's right. When you describe this process, they've got the urban boundary, so they can't do affordable housing except in a compressed space where there's no room, but they want to bring in corporations, which brings in more people, and then they have nowhere to live that they can afford. How does that make sense?
Well, it does. And the other thing is, and you're seeing this, though, is these PBIs up and down the corridor here, they want people to be riding these trains and be on these buses. And so they have approved, or they push for, these 4- and 5-story apartment buildings. And so they're bringing people in, and everyday people, they want to put them in these teeny tiny little boxes and have them right around where government says that they can go. And that's so antithetical to the idea of a free people. And that is why, you know, we talk about this every day. Because I, you know, it breaks my heart. Young people used to be able to buy a house or a condo and start to create some kind of wealth. And most people really would like to have their own home instead of paying so much money mm-hmm. in rent that goes to, you know, it goes to developers. And I'm all for development. I just don't like government in the development business with the business people.
Well, and it shouldn't be these types of apartments that are close to the light rail. I mean, I understand the thinking, but it shouldn't be a permanent residence. And that's kind of where we seem to be getting to, where you point out, Kim, it used to be the dream to own your own home, which was so you could have your own space, not to stay in this apartment forever and ever and ever and never, you know, want to move out into the suburbs or have your own space or property.
And if people want that, I'm all for them having their choice, but we're having government that is causing housing to be so expensive that it's stamping down that dream for people. So then the next thing that we have on here, Jason, is community land trusts. And I saw the Hancock administration be talking about this in the Five Points area as well. So they come in with this regentrification. And again, government comes in and they may give a developer a break on their taxes or incentives or whatever, because government says that we want this neighborhood to look like this. And a businessman, he's trying to figure out how to play by the rules, and so does, you know, will do what they want them to do. But then what happens is the value starts to go up on those little houses where people have lived there forever. And many times then their property taxes go up and they can't afford the property taxes.
That's right.
So Hancock comes in and says, okay, we tell you what, we'll buy the land underneath your house. We'll create a community land trust. We'll buy the land, and then you can have the house that's on that, but the government owns the land.
Now, do you still pay property tax in that case?
You may not pay property tax, but now you no longer have your property. You no longer have the thing that helped you create wealth.
Yeah, that's tough. And when they come into an area like that and regentrify it, as you talk about, the cost of living in that area goes up an awful lot, too. And what happens to the folks that live there?
That have been there forever.
Well, maybe they can't afford to live there anymore.
And they have to move out, and they probably are moving out to some apartment. And then they say apartments are so expensive, we need to have affordable housing. Government comes in and subsidizes it. And it's government that's creating this problem. But again, the Democrat Socialist, they look at government as the answer. Next thing, city-owned broadband service. And when I was on city council, I saw this push. There is a guy, an attorney, that this is his bailiwick. He's been out there. He's actually had a seat at the table at the Colorado Municipal League pushing for city-owned broadband. And I see three problems with it. First of all, I don't think that it's a good idea that government owns our means of communication like that.
Well, we've seen examples of this already, maybe not through the government, but through undeclared arms of the government, such as Facebook and Google controlling speech. So who's to say, if they don't like what you're saying, that your broadband doesn't get shut off and they don't have a repairman available for 3 months?
Well, and let's think about it. You know, sometimes it seems like it takes several phone calls to get your internet up and running or your cable up and running. Just think if it was the government. Are they going to be working 24/7 to make sure that you have good broadband service? They do other things really, really well.
Well, those would be good paying jobs, wouldn't they, Kim?
They would be. And then this last thing I wanted to talk about, he says, increase multimodal transit options. And you looked at me and you said, what is that, Kim? I said, it's bikes and trains and buses. And so that brings us to the very first article that Patty had found. And that is, this was from Denver, CBS Local. And Patty normally, and both of us, we normally go to Complete Colorado to look at all the news that's been aggregated throughout the state of Colorado. And then, of course, always be sure and click on that top banner and on Complete Colorado, and it'll take you to all of their original content. But now, okay, so this is along the line of what Steve had found, the meme that said, a little meme, it said, welcome to California, where we force you to drive electric cars and then we turn the electricity off. So we're just talking about Juan Marcano, who looks like he's going to get onto Aurora City Council. He's a Democrat Socialist of America. And he wants to make sure that people have, again, let's just read this. Increase public transit access and increase multimodal transit options. And then let's go over to what that Denver CBS Local said. No refunds for frustrated RTD riders amid trip cancellations and delays. Frustrations continue to boil among riders of the RTD district's buses and light rails. Friday, more than 60 light rail trips were canceled due to an ongoing operator shortage problem. Those daily delays have many riders wondering if they'll be eligible for refunds. But despite consistent inconveniences to riders, RTD says it does not typically offer refunds. Now, Jason, in the private sector, if you have an unhappy customer, don't most companies normally offer some kind of a refund?
Oh, even the airlines do.
Just to try to keep people happy.
Well, yeah, to try to prevent mobs, too. Yeah. But what is exactly is an operator shortage problem?
Well, I guess they don't have enough drivers.
They don't. They're short. Well, they keep fudging the numbers, but I've been watching this because I had an interest in becoming an operator. But the silly rules that they put up in front of you, which I think are mostly union driven, said, no, I don't think so. I'll pass. But they literally have a shortage of operators.
But
doesn't
just
a degree in philosophy qualify you to drive a bus?
I don't know. But you just said an operative word there too, Steve, and that is the word union.
Well,
you know, so, okay, I just have to finish this, then we'll go to break.
Okay.
Okay, asked about refunds, RTD spokesperson Tina Joaquez said, we're not looking at any kind of refunds. We're asking for people to sign up for rider alerts and follow us on Twitter, and then you can be kept up to speed on cancellations. Well, wait a minute. If you're dependent on needing to get someplace, that doesn't seem like that's going to work so well.
Well, and just wait until it's government-owned broadband and then Twitter's down all the time.
You're right. You are right on that.
Back to the question you asked of Jason.
Yeah.
When they say, well, we're not looking at refunds. And you said, well, don't you know, in a privately owned environment have to, or usually it's a good policy to issue a refund, mm-hmm. make the customer happy. Well, why? Because of competition. But if RTD has no competition, foo-foo on your refund.
And so that's the thing that goes back to this Juan Marcano on Aurora City Council. When government becomes the answer, there is no competition. So when you see him talking about a city-owned bank, just think of if you didn't have any competition in banks. Or housing options. Just think if you didn't have any options there. If it's all government, just this is actually will show you what's actually going to happen. And let's see. It says RTD isn't the only public transit system struggling with a shortage of operators. Several cities across the country are battling the same problem, including Minneapolis and St. Louis. RTD is working on a proposal of its own to cut service to ease demands on overworked drivers and create a more reliable schedule for riders. Government gets involved, the price goes up, the supply goes down. There you have it.
And quality goes down. Don't forget.
And quality goes down as well. So, hey, let's go to break. We've got Jason McBride in studio. We're going to talk a bit about California. California, Jason, is one of the most beautiful, or has been one of the most beautiful states, one of the most beautiful places in the world, and rich in resources. And it's just a shame of what is happening to some of their beautiful cities, such as Los Angeles and San Francisco. And so we're going to talk a bit about what's going on in California, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, where we have conversations about important issues out there that affect our lives. We're going to talk a bit about California, which is a beautiful, beautiful state, and because of bad public policy, it's being run into the ground. Its beautiful cities such as San Francisco and Los Angeles are starting to look like third world countries. And that is because they have been under Democrat control. And I want to say Democrat activists. This Democrat Party is no longer the party of JFK. These are people that believe that government is the answer and that there's elites and there's have-nots. It's basically what it is. You're seeing the middle class disappear in these beautiful cities in California. And again, it's because of bad public policy. But, you know, they're all in, and Colorado's doing this as well, as all in on this whole climate change thing. And, Jason, sometimes we can't even get the weather right for the next day. How on earth are we able to predict what the temperature's going to be in 100 years?
Well, I think there's quite a bit of proof, Kim, that we can't. You know, I was looking over the weekend. There's an interesting website called Watts, W-A-T-T-S, upwiththat.com, and they have got tons and tons of articles and information about global warming on there. But one thing I found interesting is they've got a huge long list of articles going back to the 70s talking about how we were headed for the next ice age. I mean, one after the other. And I read a few of them, but here's some titles. Is Mankind Manufacturing a New Ice Age for Itself? That's from the LA Times.
Wait, what year was that?
That was 1970.
Okay.
71, we've got U.S. scientists see new ice age coming. Ice age around the corner, new ice age coming. British expert on climate change says new ice age creeping over northern hemisphere.
And what year was that?
That one was 72.
Okay.
Here's 75. Climate change is called ominous. These are from all kinds of different papers, Kim. Times, LA Times, Washington Post. Here's Newsweek in 75, The Cooling World. Here's a big surprise, 1975, oil spill could cause new ice age, or maybe it wouldn't. They didn't put that in there. 1979, get ready to freeze. And this one I thought was interesting. I'll read a little bit of just the first few words. This one came out in 1972. This was from the National Center for Atmospheric Research in no other place than Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
So, in February of 1972, Earth-orbiting artificial satellites revealed the existence of a greatly increased area of the snow and ice cover of the North Polar Cap as compared to all previous years of space age observations. So in 1972, they were sending up the alarm because the polar ice cap was getting too big. Now, what do we hear every day? That the polar ice cap is shrinking and polar bears have to take swimming lessons, which is a tragedy. So what's it going to be 30 years from now? Are we going to be freezing again? It's just when you read through some of these articles, the alarmism and the lack of any actual research or the jump from this little fact to the end of the world is just prevalent in one article after another, just like it is now, except now we're getting too hot instead of too cold.
And so what happens then, Jason, is PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties then use the scare tactics to push forward more control of, you know, fill in the blank. So this goes to a piece that Patty had found, that California will meet its 2030 emission goals in 2061. And this is from the IB Post. It says, echoing a report late last year from the state's California Air Resources Board, that's CARB, a newly released report that shows the state will not meet its 2030 emissions goals until 2061 and will not meet its 2050 goals until 2157, a 31-year and a 107-year delay.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if they're bragging. That'd be pretty good for government work.
Well, yeah, and so the next paragraph says, the 2019 California Green Innovation Index, research from nonprofit and nonpartisan organization Next10, never believe that, presents a dire picture that vilifies the individual car. The transportation sector alone represents 41% of California's statewide emissions, a percentage that has been increasing in the last few years, said F. Noel Perry, founder of Next10. Vehicle ownership has hit an all-time high, and even in climate-conscious California, consumer preferences for SUVs and larger vehicles are adding to the challenges. So people are voting with their dollars on what they want. And this whole idea that if, in fact, we were going to burn the planet up in 12 years, then you think that they would probably really get serious about this. Is about control. This is about money and power and control.
Well, and it's funny, you know, because California, I believe, has started up all these air pollution standards going all the way back to the 70s, and none of it seems to have worked.
It hasn't. And one other thing. Victor Davis Hanson, I think Victor Davis Hanson had talked about this, but I think Patty also had this, we mentioned it yesterday, let me see if I can find it, and that is that they have mismanaged their forest there. The environmentalists have prevented, and it's happened here in Colorado as well, prevented the clearing of old brush, clearing of the forest, and so they had those deadly forest fires last year, Jason. I was actually out there, and there were people that had to stay inside because they couldn't breathe because of all the smoke from the forest fires. So you're telling me that you want to control vehicles, which have gotten cleaner and cleaner and cleaner, but yet you don't manage the forests and you have forest fires that people can hardly breathe out there. This isn't matching up. It's, again, government.
Well, you won't let nature take its course, so you try to control entire forests, and then when the fires break out, look at the resources and manpower that it must take to get one of those fires under control. And what are they just dropping water on those? No, I think they're dropping some kind of
chemical
retardant. So now they're dropping more chemicals in there and everything else. So I have come up with the solution.
What is it
for California? You said they're all their rules are called what? CARB?
Uh-huh.
CARB? Well, they just need to go on a low-carb diet. It'll fix everything.
that's a good idea. Let's go ahead. And I mentioned this yesterday, and this is by Miranda Devine. And she said, mismanagement and stubbornness have set California ablaze. It's not climate change that has set California on fire, as Governor Gavin Newsom claims. It's human mismanagement and green obstinacy. Locking up forests and preventing tree clearing and the systematic fuel reduction required in any prudent management of nature has been a disaster in a state that is built to burn. And now that this has been predicted by world forestry and fire experts, it's come to pass, the culprits are blaming climate change. And why are they blaming climate change? So that they can come in and start to control how people move about, how they live. And going back to what you just had mentioned when we first started on these different headlines, these alarmists, it's not based on science. They say it is, but it's not based on science. And the ultimate goal is to control everyday hardworking people's lives.
Well, and the solutions they come up with are not based on science either, as we see, Kim. Whether it's we're getting too cold and we're going to be frozen, or we're getting too hot and we're going to burn up, none of the solutions they propose address the actual problem. They just grab more control of people's freedoms without fixing anything.
Well, and I also think that it's pretty arrogant for mankind to think that we actually can control the weather and the planet and creation. I think that it's a bit arrogant that we think that we can.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty heavy lift to me to be able to do so. But I'd like to know when we figure it out.
I'd like to know when we figure it out.
And we'll vote on the weather, too, every day.
Yes, we will. So, Jason, let's go to break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're talking about public policy. And when we say California, you could almost insert Colorado, because these people down at the State House, the legislators at the State House, the PBIs, the politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, it's kind of like Colorado is the little sister wannabe of California. Seems like if California does it, then we seem to want to do it as well. And there's bad public policy that I think is really hurting everyday people out in California. And you found some research, so we're going to go through that. And this is Kim Munson with Jason McBride, who is with Presidential Wealth Management. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, where we have conversations about important items out there, issues that affect you in your life. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. You and your team over there are a valued partner and greatly appreciate that.
Well, we feel the same about you, Kim.
Okay, let's jump in here. You had sent a piece and said, hey, do you want to talk about this? And it was attributed to the LA Times. But in our effort, we always like to make sure that we have sourced things and that we know what we're talking about. And, you know, you and Patty and I really worked to try to find the information about it, because it was different things about California. And with that, we found some information on it, and we wanted to bring some clarity to that. So do you want to go ahead and jump in on this?
Well, there were several topics about statistics on illegal immigration and illegal immigrants in California. This is kind of a chain email type thing, Kim, I admit. Now, an article did come out in the LA Times trying to dispute this, but I found even the article didn't give much information. They would attack whoever had put out the statistic, often without giving an actual statistic. So, you know, I think we can kind of approach these with here's what it said, here's what the LA Times disputed, and maybe kind of what the problem is either way.
Okay, sounds great.
You know, one of the first ones was a statistic claiming that 40% of all workers in LA County, which would be over 10.2 million people, are working for cash and not paying taxes because they're illegal immigrants working without a green card. Now, the Times came back and disputed that, and they said this number came from a 2005 study that was informal about the Los Angeles economy, and they claim that the author inflated the number up to 40%, but that was 14 years ago, and I don't think the problem has shrunk since then. So whether it's 15%, as the article claims, or 40%, or 25%, it's still a problem when you've got that many people that are not paying taxes and working. That's not paying their fair share, so to speak.
And that's a good point. So let's back this up. And this happens sometimes that we'll have things arrive in our email inbox, and it certainly gets our attention.
Right.
And this actually goes back about 10 years, this email. So just think about it. That was 10 years ago. And
right.
Things, you know, there's been public policy that has made it, well, that was even before, let's see, Obama was 2008. So it would have been right after Obama got into office, and we saw that, you know, the border, you know, it basically just totally opened up. But we're trying to go through this email that you found. And so this was back in, it said that the assertion in the email was that 40% of workers in LA County were working for cash and not paying taxes. But when they went to debunk it, they said that actually that in 2004, it was 15%. Well, that's still a lot, Jason.
That's still an awful lot. And I loved in the article, let me see the vernacular here that they used. 50% of the county workforce was outside the regulated economy.
Okay, 50? Okay.
15.
15,
why,
right, okay, 15.
So, but you see, the words they used was outside the regulated economy.
Well,
no, they're working illegally. Here's one question that this one brought up. We hear a lot of the leftists saying, well, illegals pay taxes into the system, but they never get back any of the benefits. We've all heard that over and over
right.
again. Well, let me ask a question. That doesn't make any sense to me, because the only way they'd be paying in payroll taxes is they have to have a fake Social Security number tagged to their name that the employer is sending in to, you know, the government through OASDI taxes, tagged to that Social Security number. So how can they put money in under the fake social number, but then not come back later and claim the benefits using the same number?
Right.
It just
doesn't make sense.
You know, it's not one side or the other. You know, if they're paying taxes in, there's no reason they're not getting the benefits out. But as we know, there's a lot of times when nothing's getting paid in, but there's still benefits.
Okay, let's unpack this. We may not get through all these.
No, I don't think we will.
Okay, but it says, the LA Times said it estimated, and this was back in 2004, that 15% of the county workforce was outside the regulated economy. I hadn't thought about that. So here you have government that is regulating 85% of the economy. 85% of the people have to pay taxes. They have to adhere to the rules and the regulations. But 15%, because they are here illegally, do not have to do that. And then they also said illegal immigrants getting paid in cash probably makes up about 9% of the workforce. That's a lot.
Well, that's one out of every 10 people out there, and that's a job that maybe could have went to somebody who was an American.
Well, and let's also think about, so the other 90%, those employers are having to pay, okay, let's say forced minimum wage. They're having to pay all those payroll taxes.
That's right.
They have all the rules and regulations that they have to adhere to. There's almost 10% of the employers out there that are not having to do that. That is not any way that you can compete on an even playing field.
Well, and if the government wants to come in and make things equal for all people, there's a fine example of them actually not doing it.
Exactly. So how about lower taxes, lower regulations, and let's get this whole immigration thing under control.
Well, an enforcement of our laws, which actually existed back then.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Let's go. What's the next one that you want to talk about, Jason?
Well, let's talk about this one. This one said, over two-thirds of all births in Los Angeles County are to illegal alien Mexicans on Medi-Cal whose births were paid for by taxpayers.
Okay.
So it says two-thirds. Now
that's what the email said.
That's what the email
said.
And
then the LA Times came back and said what?
They came back and said, nope, that's not true. This was in 2004. Now, this is all the way back in 2004. They said, no, they only accounted for 27% of all births. Only. So only a quarter of all the births in the county were to illegal aliens that the state Medi-Cal taxpayers paid for. So whether it's two-thirds or 27%, both of those are awful numbers.
Well, and so let's talk about immigrants. So those that are for open borders that are advocating for this talk about that we are all immigrants. You know, most all of us, we are all immigrants. But when my great-grandparents came over, there were no government programs. And in fact, they lived in very affordable housing. My great-grandmother and my grandmother lived in very affordable housing. It was a sod hut. It was a house made out of dirt on the western plains of Kansas. You talk about affordable housing. That's affordable housing.
Well, and you know what? Those were not immigrants. Those were settlers. There's a difference. As you say, when the original, quote, immigrants came to the country, you know, they didn't walk in. They weren't given an attorney for free. They weren't given a sign to go to, protest how bad the USA sucks the minute they landed on the soil.
Free college education.
They were said, hey, you know, we don't really want you here. They were treated badly and said, well, you better go find a job. You're on your own. And that's it. And so it's a big difference to come to a brand new country that's still in the throes of getting itself together, where you're on your own to either make it or break it, versus coming to a country that has a fully established safety net already in place, where there's so many things to prevent you from failing.
Well, but I think that, I mean, the country is going to fail if we continue to have these programs for this type of situation, because ultimately it's a socialist policy,
right?
And you're going to run out of other people's money. And I know stories out in California where you have the haves. You have Nancy Pelosi, you know, who lives behind a fence and in a very wealthy neighborhood in San Francisco. And then you have the have-nots that are receiving all kinds of government programs and benefits. And then you have the middle class that they're being priced out of housing.
Right.
They're being priced. They have a very high income tax, so they're paying high income taxes there. They're being priced out of housing. The cost of food goes up because fuel is so expensive to move goods and services. And so ultimately, it's putting California, this beautiful, beautiful state with wonderful people, in a downward spiral.
Yeah, and you see the, the video, which is pretty undisputable, of San Francisco. And, I mean, they're having to pay people to go and clean up the human excrement on the streets. And, how embarrassing to have a beautiful office in a building in downtown San Francisco and have to warn people that are coming to do business with you to watch their step on the way in.
It's absolutely astounding.
But what if they weren't paying for all these illegal births? Maybe they could use that money for something else. And I'm with you, Kim. I think the more the government stays out of it, the better. But if they're going to have to be involved in it and the money's there, I wish they would at least use it for Americans first.
What a novel idea.
Yeah, it's really that simple. We're going to use it for Americans first. If there's any left over for humanitarian purposes, if you're here legally, maybe we'll help you out.
Well, the other component, we're just about out of time, Jason right. McBride, is that if we lower taxes and regulations across the board and we continue to have a vibrant middle class, what we see is we see that Americans are very generous right. and they help their neighbors. They care about the planet. They care about endangered species. And so what we need to do is get back to the American idea and have people be responsible for their choices and get government out of the way to go after their hopes and their dreams. So final thought, Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management.
Well, I agree with you, and that goes for everybody. You know, if you're responsible for your choices and accountable for your choices and you have consequences for your choices a couple of times that are unpleasant and somebody doesn't come and save the day, then you tend to learn pretty quick how to avoid the same mistakes in the future. But when you're in government, there is no accountability and there are no consequences. So you get to make mistakes over and over and over again and then vote yourself a pay raise.
That's true. And in those cases, results don't matter. So thank you, Jason McBride, for being here. Thank you for your whole team over at Presidential Wealth Management.
Yes, well, thank you for your whole team here, too, you and Steve.
You bet. And give Natalie a call if you'd like to talk to Jason or any of the folks over there. She will be at the switchboard at 7:30, and that phone number at Presidential is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And our quote for today is from Victor Davis Hanson, who is a professor with the Hoover Institute out at Stanford. And he says, and this is because yesterday was Veterans Day, he said, "Behind every American soldier, dozens of their countrymen tonight sleep soundly, and hundreds more in their shadow abroad will wake up alive and safe." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.